but when, the first thing I'm gonna ask is about your family history. You know, first you're on your father's side, and mm-hmm. then on your mother's side. We won't go into it too much in depth, but just yeah. all you want to say or all you can think about. But I'll ask you questions. I'll ask you some leading questions, you know, about yeah. Where they came from and why they came and all those things. Okay. This is an interview with Ed Kars for the Leelanau Voices Oral History Project of the Leelanau Historical Museum on 1894 at Ed's home. The interviewer is John McKay. Ed, who were the first folks in your family to live in Leelanau County?
Radio?
Yeah.
My grandfather, Klaus Henry Kars, came to Leelanau County after emigrating from Germany to Whitestone, New York. He worked there as a clerk in a store for a few years. Then he got the moving spirit, and he moved to North Manitou Island, the way I understand, and worked in the cordwood business there, supplying ships with wood. As that's the power they used those days. And sometime later, he moved into Leland, got a job in the furnace outfit down here, and eventually built himself a house there and married. And this house was located right across from the post office, right on the corner of that block where the green, what we call the Green Acre today, I guess that's what we call it. And that's where he raised his four kids. One was my dad, the only boy, and the others were all girls. And I suppose the work in the kiln there maybe played out gradually. Anyway, he took a homestead on a farm in East Leland, 160 acres, and they had to clear 3 acres a year, the way I understand, for 5 years in order to get ownership from the government and get it all in their name. So that's what he did. And he started there and built himself a log cabin over there. And I never saw the log cabin, but I knew right where it was because there were a lot of plants around there for years that didn't die off. Then there's a little extra history with him. He was a very religious, strict sort of a guy, and the fact is he was instrumental in starting the church here. And anyway, a fast-talking preacher came down the line and said he wanted to build a church. That's before this Lutheran church was built. And he talked my grandfather, out of 20 acres of land. But he was no good at all. I mean, he sold it immediately to one of the neighbors. And as luck would have it, many years later, this probably happened in 1860 or thereabouts, many years later, I acquired that 20 acres along with my farm. So there's a little history there.
Let me Your grandfather, what did he raise on his farm? He had what you call a general farm? Or
ready to go?
Yes.
For a livelihood, they raised a few cattle. Farmers always had chickens those days. They built a substantial chicken coop those days with those thick brick walls, hand-laid walls, you know. It kept the chickens warm and cozy in winter. That I saw all that. And then their cattle for milk. They always raised pigs for their meat, you know, plus their chickens. And of course they always managed, hoped to have good luck to sell some of the pigs. I remember all that. And then they sold, of course they cleared land every year a little bit. And I got in on that, some of that, when I was a little kid. And sold the logs, made a few bucks to buy or pay their taxes. So then, after they moved over there, I guess Leland was the big town around here, and they had to come across the lake to get their mail, or around the lake. And my granddad had a sailboat, which about twice a week, just in conversation, I gathered. They would go over and get the mail, and he often tells of the experiences. The wind might come up, and he tells about tipping over several times. And also, in addition to their pigs and the chickens, of course they had a team of horses. A few of them had oxen. And they sold wood by the cord as people moved in here and hauled it across the lake years ago. My grandfather never had any bad luck there. He was an old man after I got to know him, you know. But my dad hauled a little, but he often told of the neighbors, and I heard the neighbors talk, who had all these loads of wood, and occasionally the ice would crack way around, and they would get out in the middle of that, and the whole darn slab would go down, and once in a while they would lose their horses and the whole works. So it was really something. And my dad, you want me to go on?
Sure.
My dad was born in over here in this cabin, and of course soon he took over the farm there. Now my granddad, I was born in 1907, and my granddad died in 1917, so I only knew him for 10 years, and as a kid you don't learn too much, except I had to learn to behave. He'd come after me with a buggy whip once in a while. Anyway, my dad took over the farm, and he did the same thing, general farming, raised chickens and butter and eggs, had one team of horses and two part of the time as I was young. That was considered as being a little richer if you had two teams. You had one sort of for the road to go to town with, because your work horses weren't very good on the road, you know.
Now, when your grandfather died, did your family move right in the back in your grandfather's home?
In the meantime, somewhere along there, they built a nice house. This house, the log cabin was over here about 200, 300 feet, something like that. Yeah, so he took over. my dad tells of being brought up mostly in that cabin over there. They didn't build them too good. He said any time it snowed and blew a little, they had snow in their bedroom through the cracks. Another hardship, he said, I don't know how true this all was, he had three sisters that were all larger than he. And he was the runt because he always had to stand up at the table. There wasn't enough chairs to go around. So my dad married a lady from Buffalo, New York, Elizabeth Lowinkle. And in that union, there was four kids that we remember. Actually, there was 11 that died in infancy or pre-birth or something. Mm-hmm. And the way the stones are over in the cemetery, it proves that out. And
you mean there are 11 stones? I mean, no, there are stones for those.
There are stones for the, well, ours aren't in there yet,
yes,
but the two sisters.
Sure.
They're spread and all the, my mother told me those are all those that were born. You know, they all were buried.
So there were 11 kids actually born, but only four were born.
Yeah.
Yes.
Two of the sisters died. One was, well, they were both around 5, 7, uh-huh, something like that. And I remember one of them very well. She had gotten into the grandfather's sleeping pills. And I remember they used to get the doctor up, you know, and I remember them walking her and walking her and walking her. And I was just a kid myself. I didn't remember much of it. Oh, it was tough. And then he had, as he was clearing land and expanding, more work showed up. And my mother had a hired lady a good deal of the time, because my dad had a hired man to help him drive one of the horses. So there was a lot of work. There wasn't much rest for any of them at any time.
Did you have a lot of chores as a kid to do?
Oh yeah, every day when we came home from school, we were told what to do. As we grew older, we had to go out into the field if they were silo-filling or doing anything particular. And there was always chores around the barn to do. And we had a big garden. Sometimes we helped in the garden, hoeing and so on.
You had your brother, George, did you have any sisters?
It's the two that died young.
Your brother carried all the brunt.
So my mother never had any daughters, which,
yes,
I felt sorry for,
sure,
many a time.
Were there any, when you had those chores, which one did you dislike the most? You remember that as a kid?
The chore I disliked the most was cleaning stables. You know, I was... being the second kid, I shouldn't tell this, but I was, they spoiled me a little bit. He had to do some of the dirty work, but, and then I got in on it, and I kind of hated it, you know. Never liked that. So, as it turned out, over the years, my dad made my brother be the man to take care of the four horses, and, I was the cowman. I helped him. He and I took care of the cows and did most of the milking. And my dad used to keep a bull those days for breeding in the community, you know. And as I got a little older, they wanted me to take care of that. And I was a little scared of that. And this one time, somebody come down the yard, Ed, you go out and take care of him. The bull was in the barn stanchion. So he put a rope on his nose ring, opened the stanchion, let him out. And there's a place you went out the door, and then there was manure down here, so you kind of went around it, you know. And I was leading that bull, and I wasn't going fast enough. That bull was all excited. And you know, he come up with his big head, he caught me on the rump, and he took me right up. There was a straw hole there, so I went right through that.
And what did you raise at home to eat? Whether it was your garden or your chicken or the cows or that sort of thing?
Well, the mainstay in the family usually was potatoes. You raised it yourself, and it was a cheap food. And as I found out later, there's a lot of vitamins in a potato. And personally, I liked a lot of butter on them, too. In addition to that, my mother was quite proficient in the garden. They raised cabbages and carrots and lettuce and squash, pumpkins, all those things. And we had currants, we had currant bushes.
Did you have fruit trees?
Fruit trees didn't come along for us for quite a few years later. We didn't even know about it. Fruit started growing out on the peninsula. And Harry P. Harrison, who you know, he brought the fruit over here. Fact is, when I was a kid, we picked cherries for him, for Harry P. Harrison. In those days, you could get local people. Later on, it was transients, you know. And in addition to that, picking fruit, Mr. Harrison picked out my mother to pick special fruit, clip and so on, that he would ship to his friends in Chicago. So it was a compliment to her, but she didn't make as much money doing that. And let's see, we had, there were people that came around and sold apple trees. My dad had about 3 acres of apple orchard. And we sprayed those. You had to have something to spray them with. A barrel, a 50-gallon drum with a pump combination on, which you maybe got the pressure up to 20 or 30 pounds at the most. Later on, they sprayed 600. And as those apples came into bearing, that was as I was growing up, a little kid. We picked those every fall, packed them in barrels, great big barrels, and you packed them about that far, 2-3 inches over the top, and then you had what you call an apple press, which you bring down gradually, and when they got down far enough, you'd put that cover on, you'd nail it on, and then put a hoop on, they were all set to go. And they made money in the earlier years. They all went to Chicago those days. And later on, it got so the freight on those barrels was more than they made out of the, so that was dropped. You just had apples for your own use, plus those you couldn't use, you sold for cider apples for maybe 35 cents a hundred, something like that.
The things you had to purchase, where would you go? What town?
Oh yeah, for groceries and so on. We went to two towns, but mostly to Lake Leland all those days. You've heard of NJ's?
Sure.
OJ's groceries, where we went. The one straight south of where Dick's Poorhouse is. And you would take your butter and eggs there, and then you'd have a little list, grocery list, and you'd tell them what you want, and they'd go back and get them one item at a time, you know. And evidently there weren't too many people coming in those days, because you know how much money they could make doing that today. And when we started in farming, in the beginning, it was the same thing. We took our stuff to the grocery store. We went to Sutton's Bay those days. We knew him better. The guy in Lake Lilo sort of lost his reputation. One lady even got charged sales tax, had it reversed. She never went back. I can tell you that later too, necessary. Oh, and what did we buy, I suppose?
You would barter, though. They would buy your eggs and butter.
Yeah, and you hoped to get some money back, but you didn't always, because you didn't have much. You brought your spices and your, whatever you needed in cooking. My wife could talk for an hour about that.
Flour.
Yeah.
Sure.
Flour. I mean, you bought your flour and your, maybe in a 50-pound sack or even 100 those days.
How was your home heated over there when you were growing up?
Our home was heated by stoves, a stove in each room, wood, of course, until my grandfather died in 17, my grandmother in, I believe it was the spring of 22, then the folks in the meantime, they had one of the better farms in the community. It was level, and they were hard workers. They accumulated enough money, and my mother, coming from the city, wanted to upgrade things a little bit. The house was nice, but they wanted to remodel. And at that time, about 1922, my dad saw fit to put in hot water heat.
Oh.
So that was ideal heat.
Did you use wood for the fuel?
We used wood for the fuel. In those days, your hot water circulation was by gravity. The feed pipes were four inch pipes.
The wood. Now, did you get the wood off your property?
Oh yes.
And what did you have mostly? Hardwood trees or fir trees, that type?
Mostly hardwood. A few. Fir would get in there, and some softwood trees.
Had a lot of your part of the township been lumbered off in those days, or was this?
All of the old lumber days, the pine log days, that was done.
Most of the trees you had were hardwood trees.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Included in that was quite a few hemlock on my dad's farm, and those we never cut down to use for firewood, because that was a cheap way of, we used it for building material, for lumber, a good deal. I did a lot of work with hemlock.
When did your family get electricity?
About 1921. They acquired the electric line, and the headquarters was right down here at that time. The line went around the lake, so it went down across Horn Road. So a bunch of farmers, that whole road, they got together with the electric company, whoever was in charge, and made some kind of a deal. They had to do a lot of work themselves, and I don't know about buying the poles, but I know they had to buy the transformers, because my dad's transformer, it was on the end of the line, and they didn't have the lightning protection burned out. And he had to buy that and the second one, and plus could have burned our house down. We had the place wired way up into the silo, you know, and there was iron here, which would get damp, and I suppose it shorted. And when something went wrong with the transformer, and there was we noticed these wires smolding down in the barn. My dad sent me in the house to pull the main switch. All you had was one little switch up in the wall. And when I pulled that, as I pulled it down, the fire arced about 2-3 inches, and you had the roar of the powerhouse right in your house. That was a close call anyway. So we got by with that, and the first years with electricity, they gave us a flat rate. They really broke us in right and spoiled us. You had all the lights on all the time, you know. And when they put the meters in, we had to cut down a little bit. But when we got electricity, that was like living on top of the world. You didn't have to carry your lanterns anymore. Like, you know, you had to carry a lantern on your arm going to and fro over the snow and hang it up with straw and dust around. All is a danger, you know.
That's interesting. How about vehicles, transportation? How'd you get along in your memory?
As I was growing up, my dad had a bobsled, which was a little bit uncommon. Every farmer didn't have it. That was a two-seater, you know, and four-runner. And that's what they used to go to town to get the groceries and to go to church. My grandfather was a very strict religious guy, and we hardly ever missed church. So we went around the lake till the lake froze over, then we drove over. Now, in winter, if I can get this straight, they used the log sleds to haul logs. You know, that was a different type of sleigh. You didn't use those much. Some of the farmers saw fit to put a wagon box and transport themselves in there. And along there, somewhere, my dad boarded a team for free for the use of it. Did you ever hear of the name slips me. Over there where John Simpson used to live, sort of a gentleman farmer, had a pair of light road horses, which he had to leave somewhere in winter, and we had those several years. And when we'd hitch those up on Sundays, I tell you, we could scoot around everything.
How about
in transportation, then in 1914, when I was 7 years old, we weren't quite the first ones, but almost, to get a Model T. So then we had wonderful transportation, and we even got to Travers once or twice a year, which was a real event. It's like nowadays they might go to Europe. It was that much of a thrill to get to Traverse City. We'd pack our dinners, lunch, and eat it down the park down there by the river, and that was a real celebration. But you didn't do it very often.
Ed, why don't you tell us a little bit about your mother's parents and why they came to Leelanau County?
Mm-hmm. Well, they originally came from Germany and settled in Buffalo, New York. And just exactly why they came to Leelanau County, I don't know. Herman Alpers, who married the oldest Bullwinkle girl, was the drawing card for my mother to come here. But their parents made their money in Buffalo, and
When did your mother meet your grandfather? Did she meet him here?
My mother.
Your grandmother, I mean. Meet your grandfather.
You mean on my mother's side?
Yeah, I'm a little confused here.
Yeah, okay. Turn it off.
Okay.
My mother's parents came here from Buffalo, New York to stay with the two girls. And He was about retirement age, and he built himself a neat little house on Alpers Road. It's just below the Smith property. I don't know if you know where it is. And he never really got to live in it. He died of a heart attack before it was all finished. And he is buried in East Leland Cemetery. And there's some other history there I don't know very well. His father came over from Germany. This goes back another generation. Don't know much about it. And when they were building the Steffens, which was the Waterman barn, which is now Smith, when they were building that barn, a timber fell on him, crushed his chest, and he died over a period of 3 days, inch by inch. And my mother said, showed me right where they are buried, and there's no record of it, no record of it. Can't figure that out. I looked into that a little bit, but I couldn't find it.
Well, I think Ed will go on